If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with destiny.
Light, love, and sound of the Supreme Spirit. I'm Commander Lady Athena, greeting you from the love of the heart, the one heart in which we all live and move and have our being and our extensions of that grace into time and space. This evening, our seminar topic is identifying, clarifying, applying oneself in serving humanity. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call your spiritual self forward into your body, anointing your mind, anointing every level of your being, and presenting yourself in service, in deepest love, to the all that is. It is the soul that is the server, not the personality, not the ego, not the mind, not the label, not the self-definition. It is the nature of the spiritual essence that is the true self to serve, just natural as a bird wanting to sing. The soul emanates the perfume of its divinity through service. And service is not so much a doing as it is a state of consciousness. We could say that the state of consciousness that is service itself is the soul. So I'd like to start with a couple mantras that are given by the Master Jwal Kool, or DK, as many of you know him. And these sum up the attitude of the server at various stages of integration. Let's say the aspirant would start with this mantra. I am a messenger of light. I am a pilgrim on the way of love. I do not walk alone, but know myself as one with all great souls, and one with them in service. Their strength is mine. This strength I claim. My strength is theirs, and this I freely give. A soul, I walk on earth. I represent the one. I am one with my group of brothers, and all that I have is theirs. May the love which is in my soul pour forth to them. May the strength which is within me lift and aid them. May the thoughts which my soul creates reach and encourage them. So from this position, you see the personality, which is the combination of your mind and your emotional body, and your self-identification as a human being. That is the stage where one is looking up to the soul as the inner master or as the higher self. And that's a stage upon the path. Some of you may identify more with that, thinking of your soul as something apart and separate from you. If that's the case, then your challenge is to integrate more conscious awareness of yourself as soul, not having a soul, but being the soul itself. Now, when you move into that, the mantra would shift to this. The sons of men are one, and I am one with them. I seek to love, not hate. I seek to serve, and not exact due service. I seek to heal, not hurt. Let pain bring due reward of light and love. Let the soul control the outer form and life and all events, and bring to light the love which underlies the happenings of the time. Let vision come and insight. Let the future stand revealed. Let inner union demonstrate and outer cleavages be gone. Let love prevail. Let all men love. You see how the emphasis shifts? The personality now is owning the fact of being a soul. And then when you go deeper into that awareness and integration, this becomes more of the awareness of the disciple, the one who is a conscious worker. And as we spoke last week, we're always the server and worker on the stage we've attained. We're always holding the hand of the one that stands just above us on the path, and we're always reaching down to help the one coming behind. And that is the eternal position that we have as servers. So this is the mantra of the disciple. Take a deep breath. And just own this, if you will, if you'd like. I am a point of light within a greater light. I am a strand of loving energy within the stream of love divine. I am a point of sacrificial fire, focused within the fiery will of God, and thus I stand. I am a way by which men may achieve. I am a source of strength, enabling them to stand. I am a beam of light shining upon their way, and thus I stand. And standing thus, revolve and tread this way, the ways of men, and know the ways of God, and thus I stand. So there you see we transcend the personal limited self and we come to a place of complete identification with that greater light as a point of that greater light focused in time space, as that strand of loving energy within the stream of love divine. You see, you're one with that loving emanation that we call the heart of God. And monadically, you are a spark of sacrificial fire, focused within the fiery will of God. You are a way by which men may achieve. You are a source of strength, enabling them to stand. You are a beam of light shining upon their way. And as you tread in the daily life, and whatever you do and wherever you go, interacting and moving with the sons and daughters of God, as an ordinary human being, but yet you know the ways of God. Because the disciple moves into successive degrees of revelation. You could say that the voice of the soul speaks in revelation. So, are you aware of yourself as a soul? I mean, do you automatically identify yourself as soul with a body, or as spirit, or Atma, or the divine essence? Is this your automatic go-to when you contemplate, who am I? Or if not, which level do you tend to identify with the most? Your personality, your physical body, your appearance, your gender, your position in life or profession, your ideology or religious beliefs? Or do you tend to identify with your mental content, your thoughts and feelings? Please, if you're at all serious, if you want to, take a good look. How do you identify yourself to yourself within your own sense of who and what you are? And let me ask you this. Have you ever experienced yourself apart from your body? Have you ever had an experience where you lifted up out of your body and for the first time you saw clearly your body and you were not in it, but above it? Some people have that in near-death experiences, soul travel, astral projection. Sometimes in meditation, people will have that experience. Or sometimes with a great shock. The first time I had the experience, I had been hosting a booth with my first spiritual teacher, who was an Ashtar Command teacher, who trained me for this work back in the early 60s. And I mimicked everything she did. You know, I followed her like a little duck. And everything she did, I copied. And she was leaning against this lion that we had as part of our display. And after she moved away, I leaned in the same place so that I could pick up her vibrations. And what they did was raise my vibrations to a much higher level, so that later when I got in my car to drive home, suddenly I was above my body, seeing my hands on the steering wheel, and had my first experience of, wow, I'm not my body. I see my hands driving. I see the body sitting behind the steering wheel. But I'm totally apart from that body. And that imprinted so clearly in my mind that I never again really identified myself as a body. So search your data banks and see if you've had such an experience. Sometimes when you're feverish as a child, which I was, I had fevers all the time as a child, and I would see all sorts of things, you know, moving about the room. I don't recall whether or not I externalized from the body. I don't think I did, or I would have remembered it. But see if you can get a reference point to what I'm talking about here. Because once you've had an experience of really separating who you are from this body, you will never again really fear death. You will know that you are that which transcends and goes beyond death. So again, have you ever experienced yourself apart from your body, your current personality, and your role in society? Have you ever gone beyond your thinking mind into that spacious awareness that we could call formless being? Have you ever experienced formless absorption in something so transcendental you later don't have any words to describe it? How blissful, definitely blissful. So if not, or even if you have, I would like to share with you now a way to cultivate awareness and bliss beyond the body and mind. This is very experiential. You'll need to work with it yourself in your own timing. I will share with you the simple way to approach it, and then have fun with it. Experience it. See where you can take it. First of all, be aware. Bliss is your direct connection to God, and that connection is through your breath. Your breath is everything. It is the very impartation of the soul into the human being by the divine. It is God breathing himself, herself, itself into you and making you an individual. So when you breathe, learn to place great attention to your intention. Because when you breathe with intention, it manifests instantly. So take your time and realize that the breath is your entrance into the bliss body, or the Ananda Kosha. So again, find that place on your chest, just a little below the thymus, just above where the breasts are. You're going to need to work until you find that. I want you all to find that place. You touch it very lightly. So when you have time, spend a little time finding that subtle, subtle place. And when you touch to it, you'll notice it feels different. It feels very, very subtly ecstatic. Now, I've been doing this for many years, so it puts me in instant bliss. But it didn't take me long to find it. You know, when the place was pointed out to me, I found it rather easily. So I'm assuming that you can as well. So I usually put my finger, my thumb and my forefinger together in a chin mudra, and I gently touch that place below my thymus, between the breasts, just a little above, and I breathe into that place behind the finger points, you know, the place where you're pointing with your finger. Breathe into that now, very softly. Feel that? It kind of, oh, it's just incredibly blissful. Now, what you're going to be doing in your meditations, you're going to be working with that point. You're going to be breathing into it. And with your intentions, you're going to be calling your senses, all of your outer senses of sight, touch, tasting, feeling, smelling, all of your sense organs. You're going to imagine that they are joining with your breath and entering into that place of bliss. Want to try it? Call them like your children. And see them flowing into your breath and into that blissful place. And put all of your focus on that. And work with that. And then, what we're going to do is take all of your thoughts, your monkey mind, you know, the one that jumps here and there and everywhere, and you're going to call it home into that point of bliss as well. And what you're going to do, you're going to deposit your senses and your mental content into your spinal column. So you have a destination now. In yoga, that's called the Shukshumna. That is the central current of energy that flows up your spine etherically. And so as you breathe, you're going to breathe your breath into that point where you're touching on your chest and call all of your senses and all of your thoughts into your breath. And you're going to deposit them in that central column of energy in your spine. Okay? Take a gentle breath with intention. And call your mind and all your senses into the breath and deposit them in the shikshumna. And that's enough for now. You will automatically dissolve all of your thoughts, all of your outer flowing tendencies, into the bliss of God, and you will go into samadhi. That's a state where you simply are one with God. No thoughts, no outer pulling, just the bliss of pure being. This is a safe technique because you're doing it with your own breath, your own intention, and your own self. But it will give you everything if you do it with sincerity. So gradually the mind itself, you see, will be dissolved in the bliss of God. And you won't have that monkey mind pulling you hither and thither and all over and tormenting you. It will simply dissolve in the bliss of pure awareness. In that way you transcend thought, because you go into awareness, because awareness and bliss are really the same thing. So again, to recapitulate, bliss is in the breath. When you do this exercise, be sure you sit upright and straight. I should have said that before. And breathe very quietly, without any kind of forcing, just very gently and quietly, but with focus of attention. And you breathe into that point behind your finger, behind your thymus, and you call your senses into your breath and all of your thoughts, and you see them merging with your breath. And you simply carry them home to God. You take them all home to God. And you merge into the bliss. That's called samadhi. So relax now. Maybe you're feeling a little bit of burning in your back. If so, just ask the Lord to keep opening you and expanding you and allowing you more and more to embody your reality as a soul. And we request now the office of the Christ and the order of Melchizedek to place any necessary adjustments with those of you who are doing this process, so that as you do it later at home, you always ask for the light to fill, surround, and protect you, that the Holy Spirit could take charge of your spiritual practice and guide you to the fulfillment that you seek as a soul. So it's correct to assume that those who are interested in what is shared in these weekly seminars is a working disciple of the brother and sisterhoods of light. So let that recognition, if you like, sink in for a moment. You could claim it, if you like, out loud. I am a working disciple of the brother and sisterhoods of light. I am a working disciple. I am a disciple of the Master, here in loving service to humanity. That's your purpose. That's your real soul purpose. That's the mission. That's what you're here to do. So those are true statements of every disciple, from the aspirant to the ascended master, to the solar logos. We are all working disciples. So a disciple is one who is consciously bringing one's personal self into the discipline of the soul, the focus of the soul, the integration of the soul, for the purpose of service. Actually, the human kingdom as a whole, which is called the fourth kingdom in nature, is actually prepared and being prepared to be inhabited by God. You've heard about the body of Christ and the body of Buddha, the Mahakaya of the Buddha, the body of Mahavishnu. You've heard the phrase, perhaps. Certainly, the body of Christ. We've all heard of that. But we, within the human kingdom as a whole, are going to be the body of God, the body of the Lord. That's what all of this is being leading up to. Because the soul and the spirit kernel, or monad, or the I am, self, they're always a collective. They're always a group. They're always a many within the one and a one within the many. So as you work, you're becoming more and more inclusive. More and more, you're having a sense of a collective identity. You're moving from that place of thinking in terms of me and mine to we and ours, or as the hierarchy calls it, unity in diversity. When you sit with the various masters, you'll find that they're very unique in their personalities, their outer expression. But they're all unified in terms of the soul purpose. But they all have their individual ways of serving and doing the work. That depends a lot upon their race structure, which we haven't spoken too much about, but may at some point. But you have rays that govern and condition your personality, your soul, your emotional body, your mental body, the soul itself, and the monad. So we're a combination of many, many different forces and energies that play through us that give us our unique coloration and expression. And you're not to lose that. We are not to lose that flavor that we each bring. But we need to identify and clarify what that flavor is and where we can be most effective in serving humanity. For example, sometimes because we're not really aware of ourselves as a soul, we will tuck in and serve in an area where we're wasted. We're not in a place that stretches us or enables us to radiate the full intensity of where we stand in our degree of enlightenment, in our degree of discipleship, in our level of initiation. I often say it like this. We need to work, live, and teach at our highest level without dimming down or dumbing down to compromise and fit into mass mediocrity. The disciple is called out from the masses of humanity and anointed with a soul's purpose to re-enter humanity and bring transformation. So even if you're called out for a while to be in the cloistered situation like me for the last 7 years, pretty much cloistered and in silence, after I might say many decades of traveling all over the world and doing workshops and teaching, I had a season in which I could just assimilate and integrate to a deeper level. So we may be having cycles in our life when we're called apart. But the calling apart is always for a greater deepening, integration, and anointing, so that then you can be sent forth again. We are not, as disciples, to be hidden away from humanity at this time. We are here to inaugurate the seventh golden age, to advance humanity into the next level of vibration and consciousness, and to see the human life wave as a whole move into what the native elders call the fifth world, or the new earth, or the Satyasai age of truth. It's all the same thing. That's our job assignment. And it's done through us because we are the generation that knows exactly, inside out, what humanity needs because we're living in humanity. So we are the functionaries of the masters and the ashrams and the inner plane connections that we have that guide us telepathically and through very subtle impression, but leave us free to implement that guidance however we will. So don't wait for someone to tell you what to do. Your job is to discern and intuit what to do. Lord Maitreya puts it this way: take your brother's need as the measure of your service. So look around you, wherever you are, your home, your neighborhood, your community, your world, your state, your nation, wherever your arena of influence is, see how you can best serve. I've been given the job assignment of speaking to you each week, which I've done for the last 8 years. I'm speaking to the global disciples, the global initiates. You're all over the world. You're of every race, color, creed, religious persuasion, or none. Every level of consciousness is being addressed, but primarily those of you who are disciples and initiates. The masses probably would not understand what I'm talking about. But you do, and that's why you listen each week. It's your message. But I'm not the one giving it. I am the one that sits before this microphone each week and asks God to give you what you need through this instrument. And that is what comes forth. I don't decide it. Something much greater than me decides what you hear each week. And you need to learn to think like that as well if you don't already. Our job is to offer our instruments in the best possible serviceable condition we can, which means we apply ourselves to sitting down each day and doing a spiritual practice, meditation, contemplation, rumination over the teachings. We have to study some bona fide spiritual teachings and assimilate it and integrate it to where it becomes part of our modus operandi. If you don't apply a teaching, it's as good as nothing. But if you start applying it, it becomes your permanent possession. So in serving humanity, it's a lifestyle attitude. You begin to think like the masters do. The masters, are you aware, have no personal social life whatsoever. They're all about service. And you might think that, whoa, that's really erroneous. What do they do for fun? They love and serve. That's their fun. That's what lights them up. That's what gives them joy. That's what gives them satisfaction. Service. That's the attitude of an enlightened being. That's what they do. So everything they have to give away. Everything. Now, those of you who, like myself, are second-rate disciples, we serve by writing, speaking, and teaching. That's what we do. That's our natural expression. And meditation and contemplation are as easy for us as swimming is for a little duck. So you might want to pay attention to what you do easily from your innate nature. Do you like to study? Do you like to contemplate? Do you find meditation rather simple? Or do you get your insights when you're jogging or walking your dog or having a shower or on social media? And there's many, many ways. I'll do a seminar or two on the rays, and we'll look at the different rays and the way they come to God, the way they awaken. But the majority of souls right now are second-ray souls, so you're hearing a second-ray soul speaking. So that's probably going to fit for many of you. We're the psychologists and the educators and the, I mean, not limited to that, certainly. But when you realize that the mission is to speak, teach, and write, we're going to be in there somewhere doing that in some way, whether it's radio or television or whatever. So you're representing at all times your master and the master's ashram. That is something else you need to intuit. What ashram are you working from? And that would be an inner plane association, or your upline, as I often call it. So it's a subtle influence that's guiding you telepathically. But to hear it, you're going to have to spend some quiet time with the media turned off. You know, you're going to have to listen. That's why I like to keep silence. I very rarely speak unless I have something that I need to say. There's not a lot that needs to be said. So that's part of the discipline of discipleship, is that you keep yourself available so that you can be at any point impressed by the thought of the master, by the thought of the ashram, by the need of the moment. Things are moving very fast on the planet, as you've noticed. So we have to be very resilient. We have to change sometimes in a second. I know my teacher, John Rogers, sometimes he would get in a car with his staff, and they'd be going someplace. And he'd stop them in mid-journey and say, stop, turn around, spirit has just shifted. We're not to go to that place. So you'll notice that the masters and the disciples are taught to be very resilient. That's why when you make an appointment, don't be disappointed if something interrupts that. Honor that. Because spirit is always moving, and it's always moving in the direction of your highest good. So don't get hunkered down and thinking it has to be a certain way at a certain time, and then you get all bent out of shape if it doesn't happen. That's part of your discipline, is to always know that you're in God's timing. You're stuck on the traffic and freeway, you know, here in L.A., that happens all the time. Don't get all angry and bent out of shape. Know that you're in God's timing, and all is well. But look around. There may be somebody having, you know, need of your light. There may be an accident. There may be a police chase taking place. You just don't know. So wherever you are, be the light. Send the light. Be aware. An ambulance goes by, send the light to that person. They may be dying. They may desperately need that thought of light to connect with God at the moment of their passing. They may be deciding whether or not they're going to leave the body. Your light could make the decision. Always be aware that you're on assignment, and that you have a higher divine purpose that is seeking to use your instrument for the good and the well-being of all humanity. So the ancient elders have said that all souls that have come in around 1975, 1980, thereabout, give or take, have an extra 4 codons of their DNA and are very advanced souls. Many of them don't have karma in the way that some of the older generations have had karma. Some of them are coming in, maybe for the first time, from a more advanced world, or from the Deva kingdom, or from the angelic, or from the extraterrestrial levels. They're very advanced souls. And we've tended to call these youngsters, 30s and 20s and 30-somethings, millennials, or the indigo children and such. So the millennials, who are now in their 20s or 30s, somewhere in there, are here to create and manifest the new global forms in every arena of human life. They're not here to replicate the old. And most of them really are not interested in anything that's on the planet today the way it is currently. They're just not. And so they're non-conforming. But they also kind of have their own inner society in which they recognize each other and communicate like in one breath, or just on the same page when it comes to seeing what needs to be done on the planet and not quite sure how to tuck it in yet, but they have the vision and they have the soul purpose and directive already in place. And so many remarkable new approaches and innovations are appearing in our world due to these enterprising entrepreneurs. And some of them are emerging as the new leaders, teachers, mentors, and way-showers spiritually. You recognize them, for they now form an international group linked through social media. Outwardly, but telepathically, by a shared ideal of a cooperative world of global sharing and mutual life enhancement and well-being. So they are characteristically a-national, in the sense that they identify more with being a global or universal citizen than belonging to a specific nation. They are generally apolitical. So that rather than adopting a polarized position, they see themselves as independents, aligning themselves with whatever political momentum is the most inclusive, just, and fair for all people. So they're characterized very much by truth, justice, equality, and fair dealings with all. These are the ideals that the millennials hold dear. In terms of religion, they generally define themselves, if at all, as spiritual rather than religious. They do not see any value in the dogmatic assertions and authoritarianism, whether secular or religious. So they definitely march to their own drumbeat. They're not rebellious as the earlier generation, so much as purpose-driven. And it is a purpose to create a world that we can all share as a cooperative community. And thus, many millennials can be recognized as disciples and initiates. And I dare say, perhaps a few masters are to be found in their ranks as well. So remember, the broader the radius of service, the more likely that soul is an initiate or even a master. An advanced initiate or master has literally outgrown the world of human aspiration and ambition and endeavor, and no longer has any sense of a personal selfhood left. They live for the collective good, and all is subordinate to the current planetary need. So let me ask you, do you know where you stand in service? Have you found the place where you can effectively work, live, and teach at your highest level? And you don't necessarily have to have that come out of your mouth, but you do have to radiate it in your intention and in your aura. I'm very fortunate in the fact that I have created my own niche in the world, and I don't have to compromise myself. I have not worked at a regular human job since 1988. I have lived entirely free of any need to answer to anyone but God. And I've worked entirely by love donation, so I don't have any concern with money either. Because when you're in your purpose, and doing what God has put you on earth to do, everything you need comes to you through grace. You don't even have to think about it, which I don't and haven't had to. So it's very important that you find where you're supposed to be, because that's also the place of your provision, the place of your anointing, the place of your support. Because everything in the universe honors a being that's in its correct place. And if you look at nature, everything is in its place and has its own chain of life that supports it. And that's how we're meant to live as well. So look at the effect of your life and the radiation of your particular aura, your particular qualities, and see where you have grown corn, to use an analogy there. What has caused a thriving in the people, in the situation, in the circumstances of your particular life arena? What can you see as the fruit of your labor? Have you activated people? Have you quickened them in their awareness? Have you lent to their greater understanding? Have you inspired? Have you been a way shower? I know you have. It's just a matter of you knowing it for yourself and seeing what that is and acknowledging it. So have you found where you can render the most effective service given your capabilities and level of consciousness? In the Bhagavad Gita, it's written that it's better to do one's own work imperfectly than the work of another perfectly. So you're here to be you, not to be a carbon copy of anyone else. You are here to do you. So some fail to realize that they may be working in an area that doesn't enable them to function at their highest level of proficiency. So we need to always push the envelope, always surpass where we were last year, last month. Keep moving higher, deeper, stretching beyond your previous attainments. Keep probing the unknown. It's the inner landscape that we are to explore. Everything that you open your eyes and look at outwardly is not going to be here when you fully awaken. It's going to vanish in the light. And you're going to awaken to the real world. So don't cling to anything here at all. So the life of service begins on our personal level, or on the personal level, when our personal self is aligned and integrated with the soul. So the early path of discipleship and initiation has just this alignment and integration as its goal. So we're here to initially to purify, refine, clear, and align our physical, astral, mental vehicles of consciousness so the soul can operate through them as a cohesive unit. And everyone listening to these seminars is somewhere along the way to the soul infusion and integration. The very urge to serve comes from the impersonal soul, that transpersonal self. And it develops and expands until the entire life has but one focus, and that is to serve, to enhance the quality of goodness in life by any and all possible means. The server can be recognized by certain characteristics that develop with soul integration, the first of which would be harmlessness in thought, word, and deed. In the very intention, one becomes helpful and devoid of any inclination to harm. At a more advanced level, this applies to the group of which one is an accepted disciple, his master's ashram and group of disciples upon the inner planes, as well as his co-workers upon the physical plane. You learn to be silent, to silence any tendency to be critical or judgmental, or to even pay much attention to the outer faults and failings that we all have on a personal level. You keep on purpose on course and constantly focused into cooperation, collaboration, and harmonization in serving in the collective, whatever it is you've set forth to do. The second characteristic is non-interference. We allow each to walk the path of their own free will and choosing, and to serve however they best want to serve. We are actually, in fact, supporting people in integrating and standing in the world as an empowered, integrated soul. So as teachers, that's what we do. We help to awaken people to who they are as spiritual beings, and we help them to move in the direction where they can best give their gifts. But we let them do the work themselves. They all have to do the work themselves. You can't do it for them. So we best assist, I think, our fellow disciples by demonstrating, by our example and counsel when such is requested, how to live, serve, and respond to human need from spiritual integration and awareness. In addition, we can inspire our fellow pathmates to express their abilities. We can encourage, we can edify, we can exhort, we can quicken and activate if that's the way Spirit uses our vehicle. That's what happens through my vehicle. I quicken and I activate the dormant codes of light and get people cooking along the line of their divine destiny. So look at how your energies function. How do you operate? What happens as a result of people working with you or living with you or interacting with you? Pay attention. That lets you know your line of service. So it's about assisting people along the path of their choosing and not according to what we think they should be doing. I think this is a huge challenge for those of us who are parents, particularly parents of disciples and initiates. For example, we may think they should go to college and enter some recognized profession to secure their financial future. But their soul's destiny may be something entirely the opposite. So disciples and initiates almost invariably select very challenging life paths for the very purpose of demonstrating to themselves and their watching master their skill and resourcefulness. And some disciples and initiates can appear to live many, many lifetimes in one, often changing careers, traveling, even multiple marriages can occur. So one simply cannot judge from outer observation a person's state spiritually. You just can't. So overall, one must not only function as a spiritually integrated server, but one must learn how to cooperate and coordinate with others in group service. So the life of the soul and the spirit, or monad, is always group work. And while the personal self is all about the personal life and the drama of the personal life, the soul is very impersonal. It's it doesn't go into all that drama stuff as a rule. It doesn't. So in group work, we learn to cooperate as a coordinated, cohesive unit, subjectively, telepathically, as one body with many different functions, and yet as a unified whole. And I think we can most easily see this demonstrated in the artistic community, where all are artists, and yet the manner of expressing one's artistic ability can take countless forms. And artists as a whole generally respect each other's creative expression, unlike many other groups that tend to harmonize and cooperate with one another. So we need to find ways to establish the same respect and cooperative endeavor in the arenas of politics, business, finance, religion, science. And speaking of science, scientists, like artists, tend to cooperate more readily than, say, politicians or business enterprises, where competition can spoil the sense of group cohesiveness. So we move from competition to collaboration for a common good. That's the big shift that takes place now in business. Another characteristic of the server is joyfulness. The soul is by nature a happy entity because it's free. It knows it's one with God. It knows it's not a body. It knows it's not limited to time and space. And so that inner joy radiates from every soul-infused individual, even if the nature is reserved and introspective. The soul is also centered in certitude and inner peace, certain of its oneness with God, and thus peaceful, and certain of its purpose. And so the soul lives a purpose-driven life, its purpose being to demonstrate the loving heart of its divine source. Major arenas of service and what is being worked out through our combined efforts include the political arena, which is to establish international consciousness, where communication replaces conflict. And each nation needs to feel that it can contribute its gift as a unique nation. It's important to recognize that every nation has a collective personality as well as a collective soul, which would be the initiates of any nation. And nations, like people, are also evolving spiritually and learning to integrate and express their soul quality. So, knowing this, differing forms of government are also appropriate, depending on which form of government works best for that nation and its people. In religion, the aim of the Department of Religion, those of us working in religion, is to establish a more universal understanding of the nature of reality, the reality of the soul, the reality of it developing through lessons and learning through consequences, and the laws of cause and effect, or karma, and the rebirth, which offers as many replays as necessary to attain full spiritual maturity and God consciousness. These things must be taught. There needs to be cultivated a mutual respect for the many approaches to the one God, an appreciation for the many facets of religious perspective, all radiating the glory of the one divine spirit. So, deity needs to be understood to be both immanent and transcendent. Transcendent in the sense that we live, move, and have our being in God, and immanent in terms of the fact that God indwells us as soul and spirit. Scientifically, the aim is the expansion of human consciousness, with workers in the various related fields of psychology, psychiatry, transpersonal or soul psychology, quantum physics, education, medicine, and related research. So you see, there is a wide arena in which we are touching in to serve. And the current gaps in politics, religion, science, education, and psychology all have to do with ignorance of the fact of the soul and its progressive unfoldment through learning experiences. Once the soul is recognized, we will see enormous shifts in every arena of human endeavor. So, I would like to close with this mantra. We know, O Lord of life and love, about the need. Touch our hearts anew with love, that we too may love and give. And let's go out chanting, Anai Hu. Deep breath. Namaste.